Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining me today from London is Christy Grandhart. Christy is a frequent speaker at our meetings and the founder of Spark Compliance Consulting. Christy, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thank you so much, Adam. I'm thrilled to be here.
So we're going to talk today about building a successful career, or as you like to call it, a wildly successful career in compliance. And it's an intriguing topic. You know, we recently had a conversation with Karen Moore about when it's time to leave a job. And it's good to now take a look at the sort of more positive side of things about how to make, you know, your career work and do well in a position. So let's start with what really makes for a successful compliance career.
I think that a successful compliance career comes from the determination to decide what it is you want to do. I think that if you're happy and comfortable in the same job for years, that's great. But think about whether or not you can move up, whether or not you want to switch to different sides. Maybe you're in financial services and you want to get into healthcare, or eventually work for one of the technology companies serving the compliance community. I think a career for most people that's wildly successful is one that gives them varied experiences and the opportunity to really work with the business on a granular and almost personal level so that they feel that their contribution has really mattered.
Yeah, and you do raise a good point is that, you know, one, it's got to be comfortable for you, but secondly, it's got to be one where you have a feeling of accomplishment. For different people, that can mean different things. So how important do you think it is to plan your career? And, you know, how do you do that? I mean, that's something a lot of people wrestle with. I'd say my own career is more kismet than planning. And I've always been sort of envious of people who have things mapped out.
Well, I mean, I think you can never underestimate the hand of fate sometimes coming in and saying, nope, we're going left. But honestly, I think there's really something to be said about looking in broad strokes about what it is you want. So let's say in the previous question where you think you might want to get out of financial services and go into healthcare, where can you spend literally 10 minutes a month learning about healthcare? Can you join the HCCA? Can you start to follow different blogs and writers that write about the issues, you know, affecting HIPAA? I think that if you are interested in technology, then you talk to the exhibitors at more length and become friendly with the companies that are doing the most innovative and interesting things. So that if you think about either switching to where you want to go next, or perhaps really increasing your visibility so that if you are in, let's say, telecoms, that you meet people at the other telecom companies or related industries so that when you need a promotion or need someone to give you a good reference, that you have that infrastructure already put in place. So when you think about where you're going, whether it be, and I wouldn't, you know, consider it, I have to go and work for Disney or whatever specific company you want. It's not that. It's more, what kind of role do you want? More senior? Do you want more in sales? Do you want a different industry? Do you want the same industry? And planning what you're going to do to increase your value to that portion of the population or of the compliance world.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's you know, you get to the point of the fact that you just can't pop up where you want to be. You got to think about how you're going to get there. Now, one of the things that can help is raising your profile in the compliance community so that when your resume crosses somebody's desk or when you call to do some outreach, people have a sense of who you are. You know, what can people do to raise their profile, and really, why does it matter so much?
Sure. Well, I think that when you're doing your day-to-day work, it can seem way too much to write a blog post or an article for compliance and ethics professional to submit to speak at one of the conferences. But honestly, that is so valuable and so important. I was working with a company to hire a new compliance officer, helping them find the right person. And one of the people submitted an article from Compliance and Ethics Professional magazine they had written on a sanctions issue that was affecting the company. Well, that person went to the top of the list because we already knew that he understood it. So that kind of kismet, I suppose, like you said earlier, makes it so that you are in a better position. And it doesn't have to be speaking and writing, because not everyone is comfortable with those things. But it can simply be commenting or sharing. I write blogs every week on my personal website. And the compliance community is amazingly uncommenty. That's probably not a word, but it's, I think people are afraid to comment or to say anything because, you know, many of us are lawyers. We're used to being circumspect, but actually sharing best practices, sharing articles you find interesting on Twitter or in the LinkedIn groups can make you visible in a way that someone does recognize your name when their resume comes across, even if they haven't met you. So that profile raising can be done very simply. Commit to share one article a week, commit to reaching out and joining another group or going to a conference and meeting three people and then staying in touch. It's not hard to do, but it takes consistent effort over time.
And you make a very good subtle point there. It's important not only to meet people, but to stay in touch. And let me echo your point about the lack of comments. It's kind of funny. I mean, I do these podcasts. I look at the statistics. I know we get in a typical month 10,000 or more listens to the podcast, but we only may get 6 comments on them. And it is important to realize that just because people aren't writing in and responding to what you've said doesn't mean that you're not being read and not being listened to. So let's talk about mentors. We've all heard that mentors can really help your career, but sometimes it feels that they're hard to get. Do you have any tips about how to go about getting a mentor? Or whether you need to?
I do. I think mentorship is so important. But I think a lot of people go about it in a way that really can be counterproductive. The phrase, will you be my mentor, is about the least useful one you can use. I think it's really important to find someone you naturally gel with or that has the right energy, that you get along, you have something in common. But when you go and talk to them, that you have a specific ask, something like, can you help me to get into the executive development program, or can you recommend me, or do you know anyone in the sales function who might be able to share with me more about what they do so I can be more effective? Whenever you have a specific request, that can really help to start the mentoring relationship because the person feels like they can specifically help you. And once you've started that, tell them that you're going to check in with them, say in a month, or to tell them how it went, so they're expecting follow-up. And the most important thing is just to say thank you. I've done a fair amount of mentoring in my career and continue to. I think it is always something that you should do to both be a mentor and have mentorees and to have mentors. It's both sides. And people who don't say thank you, it's really unfulfilling. So to make the relationship work longer term, come in with a specific ask. Follow up after you've done what they suggested, and then say thank you to keep the relationship going.
Yeah, appreciation is a undervalued thing in this world. So let's talk about the scenario where everything works out. You've raised your profile, maybe your mentors have guided you, you've planned your career, and now you get that offer for the job that you've been going for, and then it becomes time to negotiate your job offer. I mean, that can be a tricky thing. You want to obviously get as much as you can, but you don't want to haggle so much that everybody is left with a bad taste in their mouth about it by the time you walk in the front door. What's the best way to do it?
I think that the first thing to understand is first of all, people think you're going to negotiate. So I know a lot of times people either take the first offer or they're so afraid to try to negotiate it that they just say yes immediately. And the HR people that I spoke to and have spoken to, they expect that you will negotiate at least some part of your offer. So I think the most important thing is to understand that not only is it accepted and acceptable and expected, but that you have lots of bargaining chips. So you, of course, have your salary, but you also have things that you can negotiate, like vacation time, flexible working hours, whether or not you can get a sign-on bonus, stock options. There are so many different things that you can negotiate that are both financial and non-financial, to try to get yourself the best package you can. Maybe it's pension or 401k contributions. Maybe it's having the ability to work from home more often. Whatever it is that you can negotiate, you should do it to try to get the best offer you can without, as you said, Adam, making yourself so impossible that they can't say yes, or that they're exhausted by the time you get there. Certainly, not negotiating isn't the right answer. Start with a negotiation and try to come to something that you're happy with.
Yeah, and I would imagine a lot of it is also trying to do it in as upbeat and as business-like way as possible.
Oh, of course. Yes, absolutely. And closing or opening every email or conversation with, I'm so excited about this offer and really pleased to be joining the company. Now, let's talk about section 4C, right?
Right. Right, and getting to the meat that way. So yep. How do you know if a job is right for you? On paper or in our minds, we all think of what's the great job. And then once the rubber meets the road, you find out whether it is or not. What considerations should people take into account when deciding whether or not to take the job?
Right. Well, this is very compliance specific. And I think we need to look, before we say yes, at really important things. What's the budget? Do you have the kind of budget you need to be successful? One of my mentors described one of her programs as being put together with bubble gum and duct tape, which I just love that phrase because it's so visible what that means. What are your not just financial resources, but human resources? I mean, if you're going to try to run a program in 100 countries, do you have more than you? If it's just you, that's probably not going to be good. Look for the mandate. Who is saying you need to do this job? If you don't have the chief executive or the board or broad-based support saying that the people must do what compliance says, you're ultimately basically sending emails saying, please, please, pretty please, will you do your training? And that's setting you up to fail. So mandate is so critical, budget, resources, and looking at where the culture is now. Because while your mandate may be to change it, that can take years. And being realistic about where it is now and if you are comfortable going into that environment to shift it over time, what about now? How is it now? And does that fit somewhere you want to be every day?
And I imagine one other thing to consider is who's interviewing you. I mean, if you're being interviewed, obviously, by the CEO, that's probably a sign that this is a senior position, versus if you're interviewing with, HR and the deputy general counsel and whatever, it's a sign that maybe the position isn't in the right place.
Well, and it depends on how senior you are in your career. If there's a large compliance structure and you're starting with HR and going to the deputy GC and eventually talking to the chief compliance officer, that's one thing. But if you're interviewing for chief compliance officer and you don't have any time with the CEO, that is definitely a red flag.
Excellent. Well, thanks for sharing both the red flags and the green flags in planning a career. Thanks to all of you for taking the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying I hope we are able to expand your compliance perspective.